Stories of Maine Veterans. On this day in 1918, hostilities ceased in what was then called the War to End All Wars. The armistice, effectively ending World War I, went into effect at 11 a.m. President Wilson declared this day Armistice Day. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The holiday now honors those who served in any war on behalf of this country and is now known, of course, as Veterans Day, a celebration to honor America's veterans for their willingness to serve and sacrifice for the common good. Today on Maine Calling, we will hear from veterans about their stories and memories and hear some of your tributes to the veterans in your lives. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Today, Veterans Day, we are going to hear from veterans and their family and friends as they pay tribute to their service and share stories and memories. Joining me for the hour, Captain Jonathan Bratton, who is historian for the Maine National Guard. We invite your comments and questions. Do you want to honor a veteran or talk about your own service? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Jonathan Bratton, Captain Bratton, thank you so much for joining us for the hour today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on again. This is always such a great a pleasure to be on, and especially on Veterans Day.
We're having this discussion as two really lovely memorials are being dedicated. One, right here in Brunswick, Maine. Tell me about the new Veterans Plaza there.
Well, it's a great memorial that's going in the town of Brunswick, representing all the veterans of all armed services. It's really being billed as a place for all veterans. The head of the Maine National Guard, Major General Doug Farnham, is there right now representing the Maine Guard for that event. And, you know, it's kind of fitting, Brunswick being, of course, the final home of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, Maine's sort of most well-known veteran, the grand old man from Maine, as he was known as. So I think it's a really great representation of Maine's service and the dedication of the veterans of Maine.
All right. And also in Washington, D.C., the National Native American Veteran Memorial. Why, in your view, is it so important to pay tribute to Native Americans who served in the wars? My understanding is that many, many tribal members from throughout the country have served, including here in Maine.
Absolutely. It's really one of the more overlooked aspects of the veteran story. Native peoples tend to serve at a much higher rate per capita than their white counterparts, often going without the same benefits. Native veterans struggled through the 1920s, 30s, even 40s and 50s to receive the same benefits, the same veteran benefits as their white counterparts. Here in Maine, the Maliseet, Mi'kmaq, Passamaquoddy, and Penobscot peoples have served often with the U.S. Army U.S. military rather, through really every conflict since the American Revolution. And remember, the U.S. government did not recognize American Indians as citizens until 1924, and Native peoples in Maine were not granted the right to vote until 1954, and then state elections in 1967. And through all this, they continue to serve very honorably in all branches of the armed forces and through our conflicts. And so that's why it's incredibly important to remember the service of Natives across the nation, but especially here in Maine. You know, there's so many amazing stories of Native American veterans. Of course, Charles Norman Shea, the Penobscot hero, comes to mind, who was with the 1st Infantry Division at D-Day. And then served again through Korea. So really just a really wonderful image of the patriotism and service that comes from Maine's Native American communities.
And a park with his name on it in France. So really something. 1 in 10 people in Maine, approximately, is a veteran. That is much higher than most states. I know that Maine always ranks number one or two in the percentage. What is it about Maine that so many people are veterans?
You know, that's a phenomenal question, and I wish I had a sort of mathematical answer to that one. But I think when it comes down to it, Mainers aren't flashy. They don't put themselves out in front. We don't like to talk about ourselves much. There is very much a idea of a quiet service, a very steady service. And studying military history, especially Maine military history, you know, over the past several hundred years, it's almost always been that way. Back in the 1740s, even, and the large New England expedition to seize the fortress of Louisbourg in Nova Scotia, it was nominally made up by mostly Massachusetts soldiers, it seems, at the surface. But if you really dive down, it's made up of one-third of Mainers. And Maine was definitely not one-third of New England at the time. And so this long tradition of service, of answering the call whenever the nation whenever the state called, continues through the ages. You know, 75,000 Mainers answered the call in the Civil War, and our population was just over 600,000. So it's really remarkable, and I think it just has to do with the fact, well, we love where we're from. We really do. We know what we're fighting for. We know we're fighting for something a little bit larger than ourselves. So I think that has something to do with it.
We mentioned at the very top of the program that Veterans Day derived from Armistice Day, which was from this very moment, November 11th at 11 a.m. In 1918, which was the cessation of hostilities in World War One. Captain Bratton, you've just written a book about Mainers serving in World War One. Tell me about your book and about the people you wrote about.
Well, sure. Thanks so much for asking. To the Last Man, a National Guard Regiment in the Great War, published through Army University Press. And it is about the Maine National Guard's 103rd Infantry Regiment in World War One. And so really at this moment, those individuals from Maine were undergoing the end of hostilities. And it's such an innocuous phrase that we use. And in reality, it was a really shocking moment. The guns stopped firing for the first time in, they've been hearing them since February. Of 1918. So the guns stopped firing. The men were exhausted. They collapsed where they were. Some of them were even wounded this morning. In the last final push, they were told to advance in the last half hour before 11 o'clock. Leon Le Bonneville of Holton, who had made it through the entirety of the war, would be the last Maine soldier to be killed with the Maine National Guard to be killed in action that morning. And so it's really in memory of him. You know, we think about Armistice, we think about Veterans Day. Veterans Day does come out of the Armistice Day tradition for many years, up until the 1950s. Armistice Day was considered the moment to take stock, to think about the cost of freedom, and to think about the memories of those who were lost.
What does Veterans Day mean to you personally, Captain Bratton?
Oh boy, that's always a tough one. You know, I sort of wear two hats. You know, I'm a soldier and a historian. And as a soldier, it's definitely a contemplative sort of moment to think about those I've served with, the places I've been, those in my life who have influenced my service, why I still continue to serve, thoughts about patriotism, love of country. As a historian, I sort of look at it more almost in an abstract of all those individuals who make a conscious choice to serve despite the sacrifices and hardships that oftentimes make it seem that it wouldn't be something that you would logically do. It drives a thought of gratefulness inside me to that so many good people are willing to make that sacrifice.
Calling in now, Major Lisa Sessions with the Maine Army National Guard. Thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Good morning.
Tell us about your experiences. Where have you served and in what capacity?
Okay, well, I have been in the Maine Army National Guard for 21 years. It's really a great organization that I've actually been able to benefit from having just these lasting work relationships. So I've been in the 136 Engineer Company as the company commander, the 133rd Engineer Battalion, and I'm currently now the Joint Force Headquarters Company Commander in Augusta. Mm. It's interesting because the person that I shipped out to basic training with, you know, 21 years ago, we are now finally working together in our capacities as I'm a commander and she is one of the non-commissioned officers that works with me. So it's just really interesting how those relationships in the Guard kind of develop.
What does Veterans Day mean to you?
So Veterans Day really means to me is just gratitude. Not only just veterans that have come before me, but even for my own time and my family basically being so grateful for my service and also me being grateful for them for supporting me. Cause I really couldn't do what I do without my support of my family.
And finally, do you wish to honor a particular veteran on this day? Somebody you'd like to talk about right now?
Oh, well, I would love to honor just all of the veterans that I had served with in the 133rd. I mean, that unit has my heart. And so just all of the soldiers. Interestingly enough, about a few years ago, we had an engineer reunion banquet to honor the 10th year anniversary of our Iraqi deployment. And it was just so great to see, soldiers that and veterans that we haven't seen, you know, that had may have gotten out. And I just really want to honor all of those from that deployment.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Major Lisa Sessions, who serves in the Maine Army National Guard. Jonathan Bratton, Lisa Sessions mentioned that her affection and her love for the 133rd. This is an historic battalion.
Oh, it very much is. It's my battalion as well. There's a lot of us in the state who have fond memories of the 133rd. And it does go back to the unit that I wrote the book about, the 103rd Infantry. It goes back further to the 20th Maine Infantry Regiment that, you know, some people might be slightly familiar with, some hail on Gettysburg. And then it goes even further back to 1760. It is the oldest unit of the Maine National Guard, predating not only Maine itself, but also the country. So such a long, proud heritage of service from that organization.
We'll go to Chad, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chad. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me. I served in the 76th Infantry in Indiana. In 2007, and I did a tour of Iraq, and then I ended up working at Cedar Springs Mental Health Hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and working with a lot of people that came back from the war, dealing with a lot of alcoholism and mental health issues. I just wanted to say that, you know, one thing I've learned from veterans is that, you know, drinking doesn't kill the pain, and we need to have a lot of discussion about that. I live in Portland, Maine now in the recovery community, and I just hope that all the people that come back know the resources are available, and that people that know veterans are open to that and aware that, you know, it's a lifelong battle.
Chad, I so appreciate you calling and such an important message. And I'm going to turn back to you, Chad. We know so much more now, and there are so many more resources than there were for previous generations.
Well, in my experience, it doesn't, working in Colorado Springs, you know, so many times I would see people that hadn't even done any tours, but just the basic training, you know, 20-year-old kids with kids and wives that just want to kill themselves, and it's so, you know, where do you go from that? You know, how much awareness? You know, I mean, there's I don't even know. I can't even tell you all the people I've known that have died, you know, not in Fallujah, but, you know, back here at home. And they, you know, not even from gunshot wounds, but, you know, in car accidents, or have been, you know, arrested because of, you know, all kinds of, you know, domestic violence or, you know, robbery and things like that. I really hope that, the next administration does all they can to address the need for veterans resources in terms of stability. I mean, just the homelessness rates are it's hard to think about.
Chad, thank you so much for calling. Captain Bratton, I know you're a historian, but is there anything you want to add to what Chad has said about resources in Maine?
Definitely. Mental health awareness is such a growing field within the military, and it's an absolutely, as Chad pointed out, it's an absolutely critical thing that our veterans know the resources that are available to them, everything from Military One Source to the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. They can offer a lot of resources for those who are struggling to cope with aspects of their service that are difficult, or just anything in their lives. You know, everything is sort of crazy right now in the world, and it all adds up. And it needs to be an ongoing discussion of how we take care of our veterans, for those who have served, and provide them the resources that they need to be able to reintegrate into regular society, and also just to take care of them for everything they've done, and really be open and honest and have those discussions out in the open rather than placing any stigma or anything like that on it. And so thank you very much, Chad, for bringing up that point.
Yes, thank you, Chad. Before this program aired today, many people called in with voicemail tributes to people that they want to remember on this day. So as we go to our first break, we're going to play one of those. If you would like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can post a comment on our Facebook page, tweet at Maine Calling, or send an email to talk@mainepublic.org.
This is Mary Miller in Oakfield, and for Veterans Day, I would like to honor my dad, Joe Miller, and my husband, Mike Swallow, who were both veterans of World War II. Dad served in the Army in Europe, including the Battle of the Bulge, and Mike served in the Navy in the South Pacific. And both have passed away, but my love for them and my pride in their service to home and country are forever in my heart. Thanks so much. Bye.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom, uma.edu. The .olea team at RE/MAX Riverside, committed to providing an innovative real estate experience, 956-0866. And Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions, encore.eco.
As America's longest wars continue, they're becoming generational affairs.
I think there was an expectation that, hey, my husband's a Marine and I know what he does, but I think it was a whole different thing for my wife when our sons started deploying to combat.
I'm Audie Cornish, a father and his sons on serving together in Afghanistan and Iraq this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered is coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public continues to celebrate the first 200 years of Maine's statehood. We're sharing historical information, interesting facts, and personal recollections, both by looking back at how this great state of Maine developed and also peering ahead for the next 200 years. All of our radio and television bicentennial programming, including On This Day in Maine History and This Is My Maine, can be found again or for the first time at mainepublic.org. The Maine State Bicentennial Hub link is under the radio, television, or education dropdowns.
My name is Kelly Cash, and I'm the CEO of the Maine Veterans Homes. I would like to pay tribute to the nearly 500 veterans and spouses that we care for daily in our six homes across the state. Our veterans span from World War II to the Gulf War. These men and women selflessly served their nation so we could enjoy the freedoms and privileges we have today. We feel blessed and honored to care for these heroes. On behalf of the entire organization, I extend our sincerest thanks and wishes to all veterans across the state and the nation.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and as you just heard, on this Veterans Day, we pay tribute to veterans in Maine and beyond. Joining me, Captain Jonathan Bratton, who is Command Historian for the Maine Army National Guard. Share your comments by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us on the line now, Major Nicholas Phillips, who is Assistant Professor of Military Service, Army ROTC, at the University of Maine. Thanks for calling in, Nick.
Hey, thank you very much, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
Can you tell us about your service and what you do now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I joined the Maine National Guard back in 2004, so I've been doing this for about 16 years. I'm a full-timer with the Maine National Guard now, and I'm on loan to the University of Maine Army ROTC, where I instruct the freshmen or the first-year students on the basics of the military and our value system and what it means to be a professional.
How important is the University of Maine to the Maine National Guard and just the... What's the word I'm looking for the tradition of service here in Maine?
Well, I think that it's important to note that for the first year of the school being in existence, if you will, they were already in the process of setting up military training here at the University of Maine. So the military tradition here at the university is huge. It's always been around, and I think that as far as the large picture goes, we have most of our leadership in the Maine Army National Guard for many, many years came right here from the University of Maine. And as you look through the different conflicts, which is definitely more in Jonathan's lane than my own, you'll see many of our best leaders and most well-known leaders coming right out of the university, including many of our adjutant generals.
Jonathan, anything you want to add to that?
No, he's absolutely right. The service out of the University of Maine and really most of the Maine colleges has been very high. You know, of course, we've got Chamberlain as our Bowdoin representative, but you have additional phenomenal Civil War leaders coming out of places like Bates as well, and then from the University of Maine, just. Not to plug my book again, but going back to that, the entire band of the 103rd Infantry was the University of Maine Cadet Band. So strong was the feeling of patriotism in 1917 that the entire band enlisted. And band service wasn't just playing instruments at the time. It also meant that you were a frontline medic and carrying litters, and many of them paid the ultimate sacrifice, including Arthur Stoll from Freeport, who actually sacrificed his life saving the life of another man, giving up his spot on the stretcher for a man who was more wounded, and then he was then killed by a German shell. So just a really immense amount of service and pride that comes out of a humane community.
Major Phillips, before we let you go, is there a veteran that you would like to honor or thank today?
Yeah, actually, I'd like to throw a plug in first, for my own family, my father, my mother, and my brothers that are both all veterans, as well as I'll throw a plug in for the University of Maine Veterans Association. Tony, who leads that organization, came up to me yesterday during our flag raising on campus and just mentioned that it's more important than ever with the isolationism that's going on around just to try and combat COVID-19 to reach out to those veterans via email, phone calls, or social distance visits and really engage with them.
Thanks so much for calling in. That was Major Nicholas Phillips, who's professor with the Army ROTC with the University of Maine. We'll go to Dexter and Doug. Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, I have a story that I wanted to, quite a few of us around Dexter know about this, but this is a soldier that won the Congressional Medal of Honor in the Civil War. This happened on November the 7th of 1863, at the Battle of Rappahannock Station, and his name was Sergeant Otis Roberts of the 6th Maine Infantry. And he was a Union soldier, and when they hollered charge, he was the only one that charged. And he went across the line, and encountered the flag bearer from the Confederate side, and in his own words, he wrestled the flag away from the Confederate flag bearer and brought it back over to the Union side. And that night they had a lively little dance around the fire, and everybody got a chance to carry the flag, and he got the Congressional Medal of Honor out of that.
Jonathan Bratton, anything to add to that?
I love that story. It is so indicative of the heroism of Maine individuals during the Civil War. So many who, in those moments, they did the sort of unthinkable. The order for charge came down, and everyone sort of hesitated, but some individuals just went. And the actions of Otis Roberts are really indicative of just so many Mainers who received the Medal of Honor during the Civil War for those acts of valor, you know, capturing the colors of the 8th Louisiana. It really just a remarkable feat by some of our brave individuals from Maine.
Doug, thanks so much for calling in. Going to go to a couple emails now. Here's one from Mia and Bob. We wanted to honor one of our favorite veterans, Vince Gabriel of Rockland. He was an Army infantryman in the Vietnam Tet Offensive 1968. Vince is a stellar blues and rock musician, recording artist, much-loved local icon, and mentor to Mid-Coast Maine musicians. We love you, Vince. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your music. And then an email from Kim. I would like to pay tribute to Ross Maddox, who served 30 years in the Navy, including two tours in Vietnam as a patrol boat river captain where he was wounded in action. He received two Bronze Stars for his bravery. Ross taught me everything I know about the wind, the seas, and tying up boats. I am grateful for his service to our country and to call him my friend. Thoughts, Jonathan?
Well, you know, being Army, I sort of have that bias, but gosh, we can never really talk enough about the impact of Maine's service in the Navy, and then the Navy's impact here in Maine. Everything from the shipbuilding to the great mariners that have come from Maine. Commodore Preble, one of the fathers of the U.S. Navy, is considered back in the early 1800s, right here out of Portland. And all the way on through the years. So the great maritime heritage that comes out of Maine, continues to come out of Maine, Bath Iron Works, producing so many destroyers over the years, well, founded by a Medal of Honor recipient, Thomas W. Hyde, who fought with the 7th Maine, received the Medal of Honor at the Battle of Antietam for really a forlorn hope attack that was really didn't need to happen, was an order given by an officer who was possibly intoxicated. But he did his duty, and he took his men in, and he brought his men out. And then he went out afterwards to bring in the wounded, because that's the type of man that he was. And later on, he came back home to Maine, and he founded what we now know as Bath Iron Works. So really just, the ties of service and sacrifice and honor roll through all of this.
We'll go to Henry calling from Portland. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to a veteran, my friend Federico Donas Martinez. We went through training together as medics, and shortly after my return from Afghanistan with my route clearance unit, he killed himself. He was a really kind, gentle soul. He was an artist. And, I just wanted to make sure that he's remembered. And if I may just really briefly say something to the other vets who may be listening. I just wanted to say that, we're all psyched at the end of deployment to come home, and I certainly was, and thinking about what we might do when we get back, and it was only towards the end of my deployment I started to have kind of disturbing dreams where I was headed up my parents' driveway at their little piece of land over in Mid-Coast Maine, and when I finally pulled up, I got out, my family was waiting, and they said, we know what you did, and they weren't really excited to see me, so wanted to say it's taken a while to come back from that, but to any veterans who are out there, no matter what your moral moral, physical, emotional injury or what you feel wounded by, there's nothing that can't be overcome by the love that we all here have for you, not as a veteran, but just as a human being, whoever you were before you left, and whoever you are when you come back. We love you and we care about you.
Henry, I so appreciate you calling with that important message. Captain Bratton.
Henry, thank you so much. That is such an important piece. I know when I returned from my own deployment, I faced similar struggles, you know, the dreams, the feelings, the thoughts. We all say we're strong, right? That's a sort of a hallmark of everyone in the military. We're tough. We can get through this. Sometimes we need help. And I realize that. And it took me a couple of years. I was sort of pushing those feelings away and saying, hey, you know, I don't need to talk to anyone about this. Well, I was wrong. I did. And it helped immensely. So for all those veterans out there who are wondering, hey, you know, am I worth it? You absolutely are. You absolutely are. As Henry said, you know, you're worth it as a person. It has nothing to do with whether you're a veteran or not. But, you know, take that time to take care of yourself. Take that time to, you know, really talk to someone who will listen and just remember how valued you are. And as Henry said, in such a great way, you know, there's nothing that you can't come back from. You know, we train for this all the time. We always say, we'll always place a mission first. We'll never accept defeat. And, you know, that's so true in our own lives. We have to hold on to that and be able to say that to ourselves and outside of the military context and say, hey, you know, I am worthy of not accepting defeat on myself. So, again, yeah, Henry, thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Henry. An email here from Esther. My husband, Erland N. Tucker, who died in 2013, was a World War II veteran. He enlisted when he was barely 18 years old and received an honorable discharge at age 20 with the rank of sergeant. He was wounded in Germany when he was only 19 years old and received the Purple Heart. An email from David. I'd like a shout out to my son, Joseph, who has been in the Navy for 8 years and is currently away from his family. Joe is an aviation electronics technician first class. He is making a career out of the military. And an email from Rebecca. Please say happy 94th birthday to George Proctor, U.S. Coast Guard retired of Litchfield, Maine. George likes to say he was born on the 11th month, 11th day, and even 11th hour in 1926. A very happy birthday and thanks to a very special man for his service to our country and state. Wonderful tributes, right, Jonathan?
Absolutely. It's so great how many families are able to really trace back almost multiple generations, especially in Maine. Just in my own research, I find lots of family members serving multiple generations. And it was what was really fascinating. A couple of years ago, I got the opportunity to go back to France. And we were in these underground quarries that were used to house soldiers during the war. And these particular quarries had housed Maine soldiers. And being bored soldiers, they carved their names in the rock, which is sort of an amazing veterans memorial in and of itself, timeless as it were. And it just struck me, the names that I saw there, I deployed to Afghanistan with people of those same last names. So it really was one of these moments that crystallized. You're not alone. You're not one person alone. It is a much larger profession. It is a much larger heritage here in Maine.
Mm. Thank you so much for your call. We're going to go to another break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about veterans. If you would like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can put a Facebook post up or email us talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Terry calling from Jefferson. My paternal grandfather, Arthur Francis Lynn, was born in Rockland, Maine in 1892. He served as a cook in the U.S. Navy during World War I. He said his time in the Navy was a good experience, yet he also knew how lucky he was compared to other veterans of his era. Years later, Gramp would occasionally cook, but by then, Graham did most of the cooking. Thank you, folks. Happy Vets Day. Bye.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bull Moose, offering an option of curbside pickup on books, movies, CDs, or video games. Curbside pickup is available at checkout at bullmoose.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better bangor.com/spreadkindness.
On November 11, 1919, United States President Woodrow Wilson issued a message to his countrymen on the first Armistice Day, in which he expressed what he felt the day meant to Americans. In his speech, he stated, "To us in America, the reflections of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride in the heroism of those who died in the country's service and with gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it has freed us and because of the opportunity it has given America to show her sympathy with peace and justice in the councils of nations." 35,061 Maine soldiers served in World War I, and 1,026 died.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine.
I'm Peter O'Dowd.
I'm Robin Young. Parenting during the pandemic has meant new challenges, but families not living together and co-parenting have doubled the concerns.
Also, the latest on the presidential transition, and on Veterans Day, how would a Biden administration meet the needs of vets?
Next time, here and now.
And that's coming up today at noon here on Maine Public Radio.
Hi there, my name is Robin. I'm calling from Stonington, and this is a message for Veterans Day. My husband, Terry Romano, died on April 2nd of this year. He was very proud of having served his country twice, both in the Marine Corps Reserve and then the Army. Veterans Day was one of his favorite holidays and always resulted in a flood of calls from his grateful children, grandchildren, and in-laws thanking him for his service. Because of the gathering restrictions imposed by the pandemic, we've not held a memorial service nor been able to play taps in his honor. So this is my way to try to bring him the recognition he deserves. Thank you very much.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, a celebration of those who have served on this Veterans Day. Joining me, Captain Jonathan Bratton, who is the Maine National Guard historian. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Captain Bratton, listening to Robin's message and also one of the messages earlier in the show, a reminder today to reach out to somebody who is a veteran, especially if they might be alone right now during COVID.
Absolutely. I think we're all feeling a little bit of the isolation blues, and it can be very difficult when you have those major life events. My father passed away in April. He was a veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard. And we were also unable to hold that memorial. And it's a really traumatic sort of feeling. And you have to imagine that's sort of what, you often feel like in wartime. You know, you're delaying grieving, or a lot of those grieving rituals. And it's just even more important than ever to make those phone calls or to have some sort of a get-together via Zoom or some other platform where you can see people and interact and remind yourself, hey, you know, I'm not alone. There's so many other people out there. So I definitely encourage people to reach out to veterans and just say, hey, you know, say, hey, I'm thinking about you. Don't need to get too in-depth or anything, but just touch base.
Captain Bratton, at the beginning of the program, we were talking about the dedication of the National Native American Veterans Memorial and how Native Americans have been overlooked in history. Another group of soldiers often overlooked in history are Black soldiers, and not just in the wars of the 20th century, but before then as well.
Definitely. We have this idea, in our heads that just because segregation was happening, that it meant that African Americans weren't serving in white units. Going all the way back to the American Revolution, probably the Continental Army in the American Revolution was the most unsegregated military until the desegregation in the 40s. There were so many African Americans and Native Americans serving alongside white troops, precisely because there was such a need, even though the regulations sort of forbade it, there was such a need for soldiers that it was constantly overlooked. And by the Civil War, we had this idea, well, these are all white regiments, and then later on, Black soldiers would serve in the United States colored troops, which they definitely did. But here in Maine, we have multiple instances of African American soldiers serving in all white units with the 1st Maine Heavy Field Artillery, with the 1st Maine Cavalry, with several other units. And many of these men, these were not support troops by any means. They were combat soldiers, many of them wounded, some of them killed in action, and would return to Maine as wounded veterans, serving alongside their white counterparts. So it's important for us to remember that veterans aren't just the things that we, just an idea that we see from the history books. They're really everybody. The military is I always like to say, it's a microcosm of the macro. We represent everybody. And it's important to remember these things when we talk about who is a veteran, what does a veteran look like? A veteran is everybody. It's not male, white, or really any other sort of determining category. We come from all cross sections of life. We come from all different ethnic groups and diverse backgrounds. And really, that's really our strength, just as it's the strength of the nation, that together we're stronger, and together we can accomplish any mission.
We'll go to George calling from Limerick. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Since you're paying tribute to all the veterans, my grandfather fought in World War I. He was born in Massachusetts, but he fought for the Canadian Army as a medic during World War I. And my father fought in the Signal Corps in World War II. Of course, he had a lot of different jobs, and he used to ferry prisoners around. And I was in Vietnam from 68 in 67. And a lot of times the motivation for people going in is a lot different for everybody. For me, it was more or less to carry on a tradition, plus the draft was on my case. So that made it double the motivation.
Captain Bratton. Shoot, it seems we may have lost him. George.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely. There's so many different motivations to serve the selected service, absolutely. But as George mentioned, the family heritage. And George, it's fascinating. You talked about your grandfather serving in the Canadian Armed Forces in World War I. A lot of people don't know just how many Mainers serve with the Canadian Expeditionary Force beginning in 1914. There were 42 Mainers that we know of who were killed in action fighting with the Canadians. And they're actually out of the 8 Victoria Crosses, the Victoria Cross being the highest award for military valor that the British Commonwealth can give. Several of those were given to Mainers. William Henry Metcalf, from Waite, Maine, who died in 1968 in South Portland, is one of those who received that signal honor. So a lot of service of Mainers crossing over the border, it's another reminder that the great cross-border ties we have with New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Quebec, that whole region, the families that cross over and the family connection.
George, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to go to a few emails here. We have so many coming in. I'll try to get to as many as possible. Here's one from Martha. My mother, Irene Alice Merrill, was the first woman to enlist in the Army Nurse Corps from Maine. She served in Melbourne, Australia, Buna, New Guinea, and was mustered out as captain from Fort Devens, Massachusetts in 45 or 46. She died in 1960. I honor her service. An email from Jill. I'd like to give a shout out to U.S. Navy veteran Joseph Saville Coney. In 1863, he changed the battle for the North in the Civil War. A destroyer, the USS Coney number 508, was built at Bath Iron Works, and my grandmother, Alice Corning Hume Slate, christened that ship. Joseph S. Coney is from Eastport, Maine. From Jason, I'd like to pay tribute to my maternal grandmother, grandfather, Edward Charles Barrett of Warren, Maine, who passed this past September at age 96. He was a United States Marine Corps veteran of World War II, serving as a scout sniper in the 2nd Marine Division in the Pacific Theater. His father had died when he was a young boy, and his brother was killed in World War II, making him the oldest male in the household and therefore exempt from military service, but he chose to serve anyway. And an email from Marianne, I'd like to pay tribute to the veterans in my family, my husband, my brothers, my dad, and especially my aunt, Joan Bruyette, who is retired U.S. Navy captain. She served in Vietnam as a nurse during the Tet Offensive. She went on to be head nurse at Bethesda Naval Hospital and cared for both Betty Ford and Happy Rockefeller. She also served as head nurse at Camp Pendleton in California. She now resides in a memory care facility in Massachusetts. We'll go now to Rob, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Rob. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Thank you very much for this program. This is always a difficult day for many of us. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I worked in a mass unit in 68-69. And I see if I can articulate this. Aside from honoring all the veterans who have given so much, I think we also need to make sure that we work real hard to prevent future wars where we could rely on statesmanship and negotiation rather than subjecting the lives of young people to the tragedy of war. Thank you.
Yeah. Captain Bratton.
I think that's a really great point, Rob. It's always said that, the soldier hates war and loves peace and is willing to make the sacrifice to do the former to create the latter. I think it's safe to say that no one likes war. It's such a devastating thing. It destroys the lives of so many. It destroys the and not just those who undergo it, but the families as well. It is one of those things where it's cheaper. It's cheaper to practice statesmanship, and so it should be something I think that all veterans are in agreement on, that war is horrible, and we would prefer if it wasn't there. And it's all more important for us to celebrate the peace, to be able to preserve the peace. And I think all veterans sort of pray that their children, their family, their friends can grow up in a place without war, without conflict.
Rob, thank you. An email from James, who's a professor emeritus at the University of New Brunswick. He writes, I would like to point out that First Nations people from New Brunswick have also served in the U.S. Armed Forces. The territory of the Wabanaki people is partly in Maine and partly in New Brunswick. We know of Wabanaki elders who are very proud of their service in the U.S. Army during World War II, and still today, First Nations people here travel to Maine to join the U.S. Armed Services. Captain Bratton, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Wabanaki territory extends well into Canada, and it's again part of that cross-border cultural exchange, if you will. You see service of individuals from Canada, individuals from the U.S. In each other's militaries, and it's part of again that really sort of fascinating of. We say that we serve because of patriotism. We say we serve because of these ties of family and country. And it's so hard for so many to understand how those who were disenfranchised from that could still serve. And I think that makes it so much more important for us to remember, so much more important for us to talk to them, to Native peoples, and receive their contextualization of their service and their input, and so that we can forge a better dialogue.
Peter on Facebook writes, the Fort Fairfield High School class of 1967 has published a book honoring their service to thank the 45 members of the class who served in the U.S. military during the Vietnam era. The class thanks these veterans for their service and sacrifices that they made decades ago, as well as others who have served our country. An email from Alan. In 1943, my father left his studies at Colby College behind and entered into active military duty in the U.S. Army. He soon began what would turn out to be 130 days of continuous combat against German soldiers. In 1944, my dad's unit, along with a number of other units, were assigned the task of taking control of the small town of Kesternich, Germany. My dad and his buddies engaged in fierce fighting, and there were many casualties on both sides. My father said, it was tough to advance through the town because the Germans were everywhere, hidden in the rubble of buildings. He explained that one by one, his lieutenant would send a man running down the sidewalk or down the street. The Germans would fire upon the American soldier and reveal their position. I asked, so Dad, what was the most intense part of that experience for you? My father replied, it was when the lieutenant looked at me and said, okay, Hunter, it's your turn. My father was an athlete and fairly fleet of foot. And for that and for everything else he ever did for me and my mother and my siblings, I will be forever grateful. We're getting tight on time, but we'll go to Richard in Rockland. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. I hesitated to call because I'm not a veteran, and this is their day. But I wanted to honor my father, a veteran of the U.S. Army Rangers 2nd Battalion in World War II. And I've really enjoyed this show. I've learned a lot about other veterans who served, and I'm really fascinated by the idea that of the First Nations people serving. I didn't know that there was a tradition of that, and I'm really grateful for having that pointed out on the show.
All right. Thank you, Richard. And very quickly, Lynn, we have about 30 seconds if you want to be quick.
Yes, I just want to say thank you to my brother, Steve. He was in Vietnam. He was crew chief on the Caribou rescue planes. And right now he's seriously ill in the hospital, but I just wanted to say thank you to him. My husband was in the Korean War, and his father was in the First World War, and my great-great-grandfather was William Henry Harrison Gording, and he was in the Civil War, so we go back quite a ways, but a thank you to all of them for what they did.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn, for calling in. And thank you, Jonathan Bratton, for being with us for the hour. Captain Bratton, one more time, the title of your book and where people can find it.
It's called To the Last Man, A National Guard Regiment in the Great War, 1917 to 1919. And you can get it for free from the Army University Press website. Click the order a book, and the Army will send you a free copy.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. That's Captain Jonathan Bratton, the Maine National Guard Command Historian. Today's sound engineer was Lucy Suchek. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.